from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Wednesday, May 20th, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. Mallard Creek High School has lodged a formal appeal after one of its winning track and field runners was disqualified for celebrating as he crossed the finish line. The viral moment cost the school its third straight state championship. James Farrell has more.
As Nyan Brown crossed the finish line on Saturday with a sizable lead, he raised his hand and held up five fingers, reportedly representing five combined indoor and outdoor championships for Mallard Creek. But officials disqualified Brown for the gesture, claiming he'd already been warned after an earlier celebration. School officials have said they received no warning. The North Carolina High School Athletic Association confirmed Mallard Creek has appealed the decision. It will now go through the Independent Interscholastic Athletic Appeals Board, part of the state's Department of Public Instruction. In a statement on Instagram, Brown said he was disappointed, but added he hopes it, quote, creates an opportunity for a larger conversation within track and field about allowing young athletes to celebrate major accomplishments. James Farrell, WFAE News.
The Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office announced Tuesday that it will reopen its second detention center due to overcrowding. Julian Berger reports.
The Sheriff's Office says Jail North, off Statesville Road, will reopen in early August. The facility has been closed since 2022. It used to be the county's juvenile jail. Officials say more than 2,000 people are currently being held at the Uptown Detention Center, with close to 300 sleeping in overflow areas. The Sheriff's Office also says about 60 people already sentenced to state prison are still awaiting transfer in county custody. The agency plans to hire about 50 detention officers before reopening Jail North. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
Mooresville Mayor Chris Kearney indicated he might step down in the coming months after a 2024 incident in which he was recorded with no pants late at night in the town hall with a female companion. On Monday, Kearney said he'll consider his future after the town's budget passes.
And then the conversation will then be, how do my wife and I go back to the wonderful life that we've had, and we have given plenty of this community over our years that we weren't elected, and I'm happy to go back to doing much for this community as I can as a citizen, because again, I think too many people get caught up in the highlight of thinking a title matters.
Kearney has blamed the incident on getting sick after mixing alcohol and medication. He has refused to resign despite a vote of no confidence from the Board of Commissioners, national media attention, and lawsuits from Mooresville employees saying they were fired for resisting a cover-up. The town is appealing a ruling that it must release security video of Kearney without his pants. Mooresville Commissioner Dana Tucker said if Kearney doesn't resign, his colleagues might hold a special hearing for members of the public to tell the mayor what they think.
We can say, what do you really feel? And is there this welling of support or is there not? That's one option. I don't know, as we say, what's best for the town, that's best for the town.
Tucker said that would give them the chance to see if the mayor's assertion that he has the public's backing is true. NASCAR has announced its 2027 Hall of Fame class, featuring three new inductees. Former NASCAR Cup Series champion Kevin Harvick and two-time Coca-Cola 600 winner Jeff Burton were selected from the modern era ballot. Five-time NASCAR Weekly Series champion Larry Phillips was selected from the Pioneer ballot. During the announcement, Harvick said he was grateful for the opportunity to build a long career in NASCAR.
I was pretty lucky, to be honest with you, to be able to experience that journey and be able to make my living driving a race car in something that we used to do as a hobby. So to be able to have that all lead to the Hall of Fame and everything that we are fortunate enough to experience today and getting voted in is something that's pretty special.
In addition, the Landmark Award will go to NASCAR executive Lisa France Kennedy for her contributions to the sport. The Hall of Fame induction ceremony will be held January 22nd. Governor Josh Stein wants state government to play a more active role in addressing North Carolina's housing shortage. Adam Wagner reports from Raleigh.
Stein's executive order directs the agencies under his control to work together to help solve a housing shortage that could reach 765,000 homes by 2029. To coordinate the effort, Stein has hired Janika Ratcliffe as his new Senior Director for Housing Policy.
The state itself can't build houses. I certainly can't do it by myself. But what the executive order does is it sets us up to make it easier for more housing to be built more affordably across the state.
Ratcliffe will work across state government to define North Carolina's housing policy and establish measurable goals. Stein has also directed her to work with local governments, builders, financial institutions, and others to use their data and information to add housing. Ratcliffe says she will set up public-facing dashboards so that people can track state government's progress. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capital Bureau.
The City of Charlotte will honor individuals and businesses making an impact in the community at the Mayor's International Community Awards. Julian Berger has more.
The Mayor's International Community Awards recognizes people and companies helping strengthen Charlotte's global connections. This year's honorees include Pat Martinez, Polly Altai, and Saya CEO, foreign-owned companies Midrex Technologies, Premix Group, and Rosenberg USA will also be recognized. The Office of the Mayor and the Charlotte International Cabinet have hosted the awards since 1998. Maggie Commons is the Charlotte International Cabinet's chair.
Charlotte is an international city. We are almost 20% foreign-born. And I think this is a wonderful opportunity for the community to honor those people and their contributions to making Charlotte a more vibrant, interesting, wonderful place to live.
The award ceremony takes place Wednesday evening at Booth Playhouse in Uptown Charlotte. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
One critically endangered species that calls North Carolina home now has five more members. Three male and two female red wolf pups were born earlier this month at the Museum of Life and Science in Durham. Red wolves once thrived across the southeast, but now number only about 300 in total, both in the wild and in captivity. One part of eastern North Carolina is the only confirmed place where the wolves live in the wild. Katerina Ramos is the Red Wolf Education and Outreach Coordinator with the North Carolina Wildlife Federation. She spoke with our Marshall Terry.
The birth of five new pups in a community that numbers only about 300 seems like a pretty big deal. Just how important is it?
It's very important. Any growth in the population that we can get is always going to be a positive thing. The more pups that we get, the more that we can do in the wild and the more that we can support our safe population that exists at Susan Aquariums.
Five pups died 2 years ago, right? What were the circumstances there?
So the five pups that we're talking about were born to a wild red wolf mother and a safe population male. And that safe population male got hit by a car, and the wild mom, as a first-time mom, just ended up abandoning the pups.
Is this a bit of a bounce back from that tragedy?
Absolutely. We're talking about pups that were born at the Durham Life and Science Museum, which are our safe population wolves. That's the population that is the backbone to red wolf genetics. In the wild, I mean, we've definitely bounced back. We had 20 pups born in the 2024-2025 breeding season, and Fish and Wildlife Service hasn't announced this year, but I can only hope that it's just as amazing. So we're definitely seeing a bounce back.
What do red wolves look like compared to, say, a coyote, which I imagine many people have probably seen before?
Actually, that's one of the issues that red wolves have, is that it can be a little hard for people to tell the difference between a red wolf and a coyote. They do have pretty similar far away glances of how they look, but red wolves are generally bigger, being anywhere between 45 to 85 pounds. Coyotes are really maxing out their weight at 35 pounds, and red wolves have much longer legs. Red wolves have really big feet. Red wolves have a broader face.
And I imagine maybe the obvious red wolves are red, or I don't think coyotes are red, are they?
They can be a wide range of colors. They can be completely black with a white chest, or they can be really, really strawberry blonde and everything in between.
Red wolves once thrived here. How many are actually left in the wild, and what happened?
So there is a known population of 26 wolves in the wild, and I say known because that's the population that we're able to track. The biggest struggle for them was that we have a lot of human-based mortality events. We have gunshot mortalities and we have vehicle mortalities, but we also have a lot of development. So we break up these large pieces of habitat that they normally thrive in and put it into smaller pieces. So that's why it's so important that we're continuing to work on habitat connectivity and work on the understanding of what it is to live with wild animals.
Where exactly in eastern North Carolina are they found in the wild, and why is that the only place?
In eastern North Carolina, the red wolves are found in a five-county area of Beaufort, Dare, Hyde, Terrell, and Washington counties. So that's about 1.7 million acres. It's only this specific place because this is where we first reintroduced red wolves back in 1987. It was the most ideal location based off a number of factors, the biggest one being that there's a lot of habitat out here and there's not a lot of people. The other thing is that there is a lot of land that is owned by the federal government and by the state that is managed for wildlife and habitat. So they just haven't been able to expand, and we haven't added new populations across the United States. However, there is a recovery plan in place that states that they do want to add additional release locations for red wolves. You cannot recover a species without a lot of collaboration and understanding from everyone involved, not just the Fish and Wildlife Service or NGOs, but also with the public. It's very heavy on the education and the outreach and the understanding within the communities themselves.
Okay, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely, thank you.
Katarina Ramos is the Red Wolf Education and Outreach Coordinator with the North Carolina Wildlife Federation.
Today is MECDEC Day, May 20th being the day the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence is said to have been announced back in 1775. And as our tradition here at WFAE, we're sharing a reading of the actual declaration. A caveat now, that original, the one supposedly read on the steps of the courthouse in Uptown, was reportedly lost in a fire in the year 1800. The version we have available dates from a published report from 1819 in the Raleigh Register. As for the reading, since the original was crafted by, quote, representatives of Charlottetown and the surrounding areas, this year we once again bestow the honor to current Mecklenburg County Commission Chair Mark Jarrell.
The Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence, Charlotte, North Carolina, May 20th, 1775. 1. Resolved that whoever directly or indirectly abetted or in any way, form or manner, countenanced the uncharted and dangerous invasion of our rights, as claimed by Great Britain, is an enemy to this country, to America, and to the inherent and inalienable rights of man. 2. Resolved, that we the citizens of Mecklenburg County do hereby dissolve the political bands which have connected us to the mother country, and hereby absolve ourselves from all allegiance to the British Crown, and abjure all political connection, contract, or association with that nation who have wantonly trampled on our rights and liberties, and inhumanly shed the innocent blood of American patriots at Lexington. 3. Resolved, that we do hereby declare ourselves a free and independent people, are, and of right ought to be, a sovereign and self-governing association under the control of no power other than that of our God and the general government of the Congress, to the maintenance of which independence we solemnly pledge to each other our mutual cooperation, our lives, our fortunes, and our most sacred honor. 4. Resolved, that as we now acknowledge the existence and control of no law or legal officer, civil or military, within this country, we do hereby ordain and adopt, as a rule of life, all, each and every of our former laws, wherein, nevertheless, the Crown of Great Britain never can be considered as holding rights, privileges, immunities, or authority therein. 5. Resolved, that it is also further decreed that all, each and every military officer in this county is hereby reinstated to his former command and authority, he acting conformably to these regulations, and that every member present of this delegation shall henceforth be a civil officer, v. a justice of the peace, in the character of a committee man to issue process, hear, and determine all matters of controversy according to said adopted laws, and to preserve peace and union and harmony in said county, and to use every exertion to spread the love of country and fire of freedom throughout America until a more general and organized government be established in this province.
That's Mecklenburg County Commission Chair Mark Jarrell reading the MECDEC, the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence, born on this date in 1775. And for Wednesday, May 20th, that's newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.